The Fan on Demand.
A very good day. I'm Nigel Reed. And this is the Soccer Show on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week, ready to launch. We're in Vancouver, where Canada kicks off the Olympic qualifying campaign. We'll talk to veteran midfielder Diana Matheson. Also this week, forward thinking, we'll chat to Thomas Rongen, the new TFC Academy director, about his plans for the future. Plus, Bex is back for another 2 years. Does he still shine a light on MLS? Or is he just drawing his pension in the sunshine? All that and more, plus your opinion, this week, right here on The Soccer Show. Well, I told you last week that we'd get him, and we've got him.
Good.
Not Beckham, by the way. Your old pal, Tommy Rongen. Coming up a little later.
Be nice to speak to Tom.
You were telling me a story, and you can probably discuss it with him a little later on, about how in 1980, when as teammates for the Washington Diplomats, you got to the Soccer Bowl playoffs, but it didn't quite happen. And there was a controversial moment along the way which might have made all the difference, and history might be changed. Only we knew. What happened?
Well, actually, Johan Cruyff, who was on our team that year and eventually became MVP of the league, was injured and didn't play in this important game in Los Angeles. The back half of a home and away, and Thomas Rongen scored in the pouring rain what we thought was the winning goal, but was unceremoniously disallowed by none other than the arbitrator, the referee.
The arbitrator.
And Tommy, I remember him down on both knees with both fists up because he figured that was it. We were going to go home.
He was through. You were through.
We were through.
You had scored the winning goal. That's it. Thanks
very
much.
Not meant to be.
Thanks for coming. We'll see you in the final.
Yeah. No, it was one of those things. You know, it happens.
It's difficult, though, isn't it, sometimes? I mean, especially when goals are apparently legitimate and then an official says, whoa, hang on there. Not so fast with the celebrations.
Well, I can't, to be quite honest, Nigel, I don't, can't remember if it was a foul or offside or something that the referee saw incorrect. Of course, we felt slighted. Players always do. I mean,
players are never wrong.
No,
never.
No, but we were upset and we wanted justification. Of course, we came off the field trying to let our coaches know we did the best we could and we should have won. But that despicable person took it away from us.
Did you or did you not, after the final whistle, remonstrate with the referee?
Well, of course we did.
Of course you did.
As all players
as
do.
As goal players do.
Sore losers,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You see, no respect for officialdom. That's my problem with this stupid game. But there we are. But you reckon Tommy will remember this better than you?
I don't know if he will. Maybe he will, maybe he won't.
Well, he remembers you. That's the good news.
Oh, thank goodness.
Because I was in touch with TFC earlier this week, and I said to the communications guy, I said, if he's got any doubts about coming on the show, tell him that Yerushi is the co-host, and he played with him in Washington in 1980.
Well, why wouldn't he remember?
And the good news is he remembers you.
Well, of course he'd remember.
Well, of course he would.
High impact.
High impact.
No, eye impact.
Well, high impact as well.
Oh, high impact, okay.
That's just my assessment.
That'd be good to speak to him.
Tonight's the night, Bobby. Tonight is the night that we've waited 6 months for or thereabouts. Canada kicking off against Haiti. On the road, they hope, that leads to the London Olympics in July 2012. So are we excited? Are we apprehensive? Concerned? Optimistic? Trusting? All sorts of emotions going through my mind as we wait to see what sort of metamorphosis, if that's the right word, this team has gone through over the last 6 months since the unmentionable in Germany, and how they've come out the other end with a new coach, one or two players, but basically the heart of that team that crumbled at the Women's World Cup. How do you think? We'll talk to Diana Matheson in a little while.
Well, I think that Haiti, Cuba, and Costa Rica should not have any of these young ladies lose any sleep. I would imagine that Canada should be able to get through at the top of the group. And then it will be, you know, I mean, probably to play Mexico in those in that important semifinal game. And heaven forbid they had they have to play the U.S. That would be a lot more difficult, of course. But, you know, I mean, Nigel, you know, yes, they were morally, you know, not at their best in the World Cup and things weren't going right. And perhaps their coach and her antics didn't help the team perform. But what for me, what really gets me nervous about this team is the fact that technically they need to be better. And I don't know if this group can technically be better to compete with the top 10 in the world. And what worries me even more is who are the young Canadians ready to fill the boots of Diana Matheson and Christine Sinclair and the rest of the girls who have been in the program for quite a while. That's what would worry me.
What worries me, and I think what concerns a lot of us who haven't seen this team since the end of Germany, and yes, they went to the Pan Am Games and won that, but that, for me, is irrelevant because the US weren't there, and Brazil, the team they beat in the final, sent a young squad. None of the stars of the World Cup, Marta and Cristiano and Renata Costa, weren't there. So this is the first serious test, but you give us a professional perspective on this. And I know it didn't happen to you very often as a player because you were playing on very good teams, but when it comes to mending broken hearts and restoring shattered confidence, the new coach, John Herdman, who's been on this show a couple of times, has stressed that. He stressed it this week about how it is the psychological strength of this team that will be key over the next 10 days. And we're not talking about Haiti and Cuba, who haven't got uniforms and had to be helped out by BC Soccer. But we are talking about that semi-final, which will in all likelihood be against Mexico, and goodness forbid against the US, because that won't be good enough. You've got to get to the final. These players have got to believe again in the team and in each other and in themselves, have they not?
Well, of course. And Herdman is right to try and pull on the emotional strings of each player and to get them mentally ready to play. And that's the right approach. What worries me, and when you're a player, deep in your heart or deep in your soul, you may not never admit it, but if you don't believe you're technically as good as the other team, then there is
You've got a problem.
Silent reserve about how you play the game and how you react with your teammates. If you don't believe that the teammate next to you is competent, you won't give her the ball. It's as simple as that.
How many times have we sat here on air and in private and had chats about the psychology of the game? Yes, it's 11 aside. There's one ball. There's two goals at each end of the field. But, you know, I respect your analysis because you've been there. You've been inside the lines as a professional. And you've told me countless times that the game is won and lost before a ball is kicked. When you look at your opponent in the tunnel, do you have that moment where you look at him or her and you have that individual battle already won?
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if we can exaggerate and say that's the moment that you determines whether you win or lose. But it really plays on the minds of, you know, if you win that eyeball competition in the tunnel and you're able to impart the fact that you feel good about yourself, your teammate, and as you look at your opponent, you're basically messaging to him or her that it's going to be a long night for them.
Now, what about playing at home? It should be, because we all know that soccer playing at home is home advantage. But the fact of the matter is that Canada doesn't do it very often, very rarely, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Edmonton was a long time ago. That was 2002. That's 10 years ago. So now Canada hosts this tournament, and it's going to host a lot of tournaments in the coming years. Now it hosts this tournament in Vancouver, with a home crowd, one would suspect. But of course, with that enthusiasm comes expectation as well. Suddenly the pressure is back on you again to perform.
Well, of course there's pressure.
Yeah.
But it's better that they're cheering for you than cheering against you. And I do believe that, you know, playing in Vancouver will be an advantage for, you know, our ladies in red. And, I think that if they get to that monumental game, either against Mexico or the U.S., that the home crowd will be, you know, a positive influence for the Canadian team. It's got to be.
I'm not sure. I'm absolutely not. I'm really not sure, because it happens so rarely. We've seen Canada triumph in other parts of the world, in the U.S. and in Mexico. That's how they got to the World Cup itself. And it seems to me that sometimes when there isn't that stifling pressure to perform, that maybe they, you know, feel a little more liberated. And I think that's something that Herdman has tried to get across.
Well, maybe
that, you know, they have to play with a little bit of freedom and a little bit of trust.
Well, but you said it best. Maybe the girls couldn't handle the sixth ranking that they had going into the World Cup. Maybe that was too much for them. And you know, and you're right, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with being a favorite or being expected to win, being expected to perform. We've been told for 10 years that Canada is one of the top teams in the world, and yet at the World Cup they performed dreadfully.
They were 16th out of 16.
So, you know, what's the expectation going into this competition now?
Well, we'll find out. We'll talk to Diana Matheson shortly on the Soccer Show. Beckham is back. He signed a 2-year deal with the LA Galaxy. He says the family is settled in the United States. He's 36 now. So he's going to sell some tickets again in MLS for the next couple of years. To me, it's a lifestyle choice. And it's driven by not Mr. Beckham, but probably Mrs. Beckham, who knows that the kids are settled at school and they're developing American accents and they quite like the sunshine and the shopping in Beverly Hills or Bel Air. And he thinks, yeah, okay, I'll stick around. I could have gone to Paris, but I'll stay put, thanks.
Yeah, I don't agree with you at all. I think that Beckham thinks about Beckham. I think if he could have gone to PSG, he would have been there. I think that, you know, if his wife wanted him to stay in L.A., he would have made it known that L.A. was a very important, option for him. He never did. Beckham always chooses, other things except for his team. The fact that he's in MLS for the next 2 years is a positive. Beckham is still a very good player. He's 36 and can perform in this league. And I will enjoy watching him play. But, Nigel, Beckham is not here for U.S. soccer, I can tell you that much.
Well, that's what he says.
Well, I know what he says, but I don't believe it.
Well, why on earth not?
Well, because I don't think he's sincere.
You don't think MLS MLS has improved as a product since he came?
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't.
Well, of course it has.
I don't think so.
It has more teams. It has more high-profile players. TFC.
Well,
has a couple, two or three designated
players. Has TFC improved over the last, over 5 years? Well, they had the worst record 5 years after they started.
That's a different conversation altogether.
You asked me a question.
Yes,
if the MLS has improved over the years, and my answer is no.
So Thierry Henry plays here. Robbie Keane plays here. Juan Pablo Angel plays here, and the list goes on.
Yeah.
This was a rule that was instigated specifically so that high-profile players could play in the United States, or in North America, I should say. So how can it be that this league has not improved in terms of quality?
Well, because I don't think those players actually put their soul into those teams or the league. I haven't heard any of them talk positively about the league.
Share your thoughts with us. Nigel at fan590.com. Diana Matheson will join us when the Soccer Show continues. What a save! So Cuba and Costa Rica to come. But overtures and beginners begin at BC Place tonight, at least for Canada, with the game against Haiti, not exactly a heavyweight in women's soccer, but it's 11 against 11, and there's always that danger. I don't want to put doubts in anybody's minds, but there is always a danger when it's a competitive game, and you've been through this, where you know you should win, and you know you should win handily, and the more you think you should win handily, the tougher it can become.
It can, yeah, especially when the other team is tactically organized and focuses on
parking the bus,
on preventing those strengths that Canada have to cause them problems. And when frustration sets in, with a team that is favored and should win and things aren't happening, yeah, that it could be a problem.
Let's find out more, because the team very soon, in about the next 15 or 20 minutes, are going to leave the team hotel in Vancouver and make their way down to the stadium at BC Place. So just in time for us to catch Diana Matheson, who should be playing tonight but isn't, because unfortunately she's got a knee injury and has had surgery and hasn't recovered just in time for this tournament. Diane, welcome back to the soccer show.
Thanks for having me. Nice to talk
it's,
to you.
It's good of you to take the time, because I know it's a busy time. Obviously, it's game day, and we didn't know that anybody would want to talk to us at such a delicate stage when everybody's in the last moments before the game takes place. What's the sort of mood in the camp that you've observed? I mean, obviously frustration for you, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But what's the mood in the camp? I guess it should be one of optimism.
Yeah, definitely. I think the word right now is just excitement. We're excited to be at home. This is the first time for me personally that we'll be at home, and it'll be a game that counts and that matters. And then we've been around BC Place, and the turf looks amazing, and there's been good media coverage so far in the city. So I think everyone's just excited to get the tournament going.
Any concerns about the playing surface? You mentioned it there. Everybody happy with it?
Yeah, I haven't heard any complaints so far. I mean, it's turf. Obviously, ideally, yeah, we always love to be on grass, but the turf is fairly new, and it looks pretty good.
Same for everybody, Diana.
Pardon?
Same for everybody in terms of the playing surface, I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly that. Hmm. We were actually saying that maybe we should open up the roof, make it a little colder in there. That might favor us a bit.
You never know. Yeah, I gather, in fact, there's been an awful lot of snow on the West Coast.
It's been pretty chilly over here in Vancouver, but sunny, which is nice.
Which doesn't happen too much. So, obviously, fingers crossed going forward. But, while there is the publicity and while there is the expectation once again, mm-hmm. I wonder whether, there is also a concern, not amongst the team necessarily, but that this team has to kind of earn the trust, I think, of the fans again after what happened in Germany. Do you sense that?
Yeah, I think we're more aware than anyone, what happened in the World Cup, and I think that's in the back of a lot of people's minds. But I think first and foremost, we're looking forward to the tournament, and I don't think that'll be too much of a burden. And I think if we come out and we play the way we've been training with John, that I think we'll be fine, and we'll get some fans back.
Diana, it's Bobby Urushi, and the last time you were on the show, it was right in the middle of Carolina Maracci's tenure, and you spoke about how the team was working well with her, and she was technically focused on, getting the team to play a little bit more on the ground and playing a more technical game. Compare that with what John Herdman is doing right now with the team. How would you compare the approach in terms of tactics and strategy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Carolina was, she changed drastically, brought in the tactics and all that. I think John is just continuing that on. He's urging, again, possession and working more on individual skills. And he also uses a lot more video, a lot more analysis, so we can see exactly what we need to do, improve on the opportunities that are there that we're not necessarily using. So I think he's just adding on to it more, and I think he's just going to help us get better.
The mood must be a lot better, and without going into any details in the last 3 or 4 months of preparation leading to World Cup, and we know the problems that the team had with Carolina emotionally, John Herdman has really worked on lifting spirits and building confidence, and you think that's obviously something that will take this team to the qualifications.
I think so. I think this has always been a tight team, and it's what happens on the field that a lot of times helps or hurts the team spirit. And I think if we can come out and play well, that's going to help a lot. I think Carolina came in and did an amazing job and brought the team technically to a new level. And I think we've been really lucky with the coaches we've had. They've come in the right order. I think Carolina progressed this technically, and now John's going to take us to another level.
We hear that John doesn't mince his words, Diana. If he doesn't think something's right with an individual, he doesn't have any problem telling them so, but then he will also find solutions to improve that particular problem, whatever it happens to be.
Yep, I think that's a trait of good head coaches. They tell you exactly what's going on, good or bad. And John has a really good way of always making things positive. You know, if you're not starting the game, it's because you're a finisher, and that's equally as important, and you're going to finish the game strong, and that's going to make a difference. So he's just really good at framing things positively and making sure the whole team is on the same page.
I think a lot has been made in the lead-up to this tournament, Diana, about the psychological state of the Canadian team, and it is now 6-7 months since what happened in Germany. Is that accurate, or have the players left that long behind? I mean, have the hearts been mended and the confidence restored?
After the World Cup, it was obviously really tough.
Yeah.
But I think the play in the Pan Am showed that, you know, on the field, we can get over it and play on. But I think that's always going to be in the back of your mind. We didn't qualify in 2004 for the Olympics, and that's still something that's back there, you know. But that's something that you just keep using. This time around, we had the experience in 2004 we didn't qualify, and there's no way we're going to let that happen again. So I think it just helps us for the future.
Bob and I were talking earlier in the show about playing at home and whether or not that's a double-edged sword. Obviously, you'll have home advantage, but once again, Diana, there is that expectation and kind of pressure to perform in front of a Canadian crowd.
Yeah, there is, but I think most of the girls are just excited. This is the first time we're trying to qualify for something where, you know, we don't have this Central American fans heckling us and heckling our goalie every time we kick off. So I think it's just going to be fun to play in front of the fans.
How difficult is this for you personally? Because, you know, it is a home tournament, as you say, and it's a very rare occurrence for any Canadian team, and there you are battling like crazy to get over this knee surgery. You didn't quite make it. How close were you? Close at all?
I'm probably not that close. Mm-hmm. I think coming into it, I thought I had a good chance, but when it came down to it and I tried to push it, it just didn't respond very well. So
how difficult is this for you now to have to sit and watch?
It's definitely difficult. Like I said, this is the first tournament for me that, you know, the games would have counted for something, you know, aside from international friendlies in Canada. When we first went to BC Place, our first practice here, and we went out on the turf, you know, it really hit me. You know, it looks like a really fun field to play on, so I'm definitely going to miss that. But, you know, I'll get through it here and cheer the team on as we qualify and then have my knee all ready for London.
Well, I guess that's the bonus, because the knee will be ready by the time you get to London in July.
Yeah, I definitely have time to let it heal properly now.
Message for the fans before we let you go, Diana?
Just come join us, I guess. We're hoping to build more and more fan support as the tournament goes on. The Costa Rica game is very important, our third game, so we finished first in our group. And then, of course, the semifinal, we're hoping to get a lot of fans out for that game.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Diana. Do pass on our best wishes to the coach and, of course, your teammates. And we hope that everything goes smoothly over the next 10 days or so.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. That's Diana Matheson, who always is, she's always, I mean, she sat there. She must be personally in the depths of despair. She can't play. No. She cannot play. She just didn't get there. And yet she's saying, it's okay, we'll be fine, even though I can't play. I mean, you've got to love the attitude.
Well, she's quite a spark plug.
Isn't she? I mean, on and off the field.
I can't remember a Canadian team without her in the middle. She's such a good player, such a great competitor, and it must really hurt her to sit and watch and be a cheerleader and, you know, keep the spirits up. I mean, that's a job in itself, of course, but it's very difficult to do. Not when you'd rather be on the field.
And I think it's something that not a lot of people appreciate, unless you've actually been in that situation where you're no use sitting in the stand or sitting in the dugout. Yeah, you're a cheerleader, but you know that if you were out there, you'd make a difference.
Well, of course. I mean, you've got to think that way. Otherwise, you'd never would be there in the first place. So if it doesn't hurt, then there's something wrong with you.
Well, it's a selfish sport. You know, we've said this so many times. Yeah. It's a team game, but it's a selfish sport.
Well, it is. You know, you have to look after yourself, and you have to believe that, you know, the team is worse off without you. You really do.
And the one thing we didn't ask her, and it probably wouldn't have been fair to ask her, but it's worth speculating, is without Diana Matheson in that central midfield role, others have to step up. Kaylin Kyle, Sophie Schmidt, who was perhaps the one player that came out of Germany with some credit, you know, not necessarily in these group games, but when it comes to the game, the semi-final, whether it be Mexico or the US, you've got to stamp your authority. You've got to win that midfield battle and be able to build from that position to feed the forward players.
Well, absolutely. And Diana is arguably the most technical, you know, player on the team. And without her, seeing that Canada is very shy of technical players, you kind of wonder who is going to take her spot. And I'll be curious to watch tonight against Haiti.
Well,
in terms of who is the new midfield general.
No, we shall see. Always an opportunity for someone else to step up. U.S., of course, are the favourites for this competition. Just about the same selection that they took to the World Cup and almost beat Japan in the World Cup final. With, I see, the addition of one Sidney Leroux. Playing for the U.S., born in Canada.
Oh, what a shock.
Had to go south to make it.
I didn't think it happened.
Oh, you didn't know this?
With the women.
Oh,
well.
Yes. Yeah, does, oh, huh? Well, her dad's American.
Okay.
But she was born in BC. So she's playing at home. And she's a good player. Good young striker. She's just 21 years of age. But playing.
She's born
for the Stars
in Canada,
and Stripes.
But lived in the U.S. for most of her life. I mean,
went right? down when she was about, 14 or 15, oh, apparently. Okay.
Well,
and she's now 21. She could be the next Sinclair, but not anymore.
Well,
just saying. Because eventually Christine's going to get a little leggy.
Yeah.
You know,
aren't there any U.S.-born players that come to Canada to live and then decide to play for Canada?
I'm sure it'll happen sooner or later. Maybe we'll discuss that when the soccer show continues.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. The Soccer Show with Nigel Reed and Bobby Roushi on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We always encourage you to join the conversation. You can do that in a couple of ways. You can email us, nigel@fan590.com. nigel@fan590.com, or you can tweet me, @Nigel_Reed. @Nigel_Reed. We were mentioning before the break that the US has a Canadian-born player in the form of Sidney Leroux. We have some very sharp listeners. Did you know that? Among them, Fred Jean-Francois, who tweets. He says, by the way, before you get on your high horse about Canadian-born players playing for the U.S., he says, we've already got two American-born players on the Canadian team.
Oh, good.
Chelsea Stewart and Lauren Sesselman. So stick that in your pipe and smoke.
Oh, good.
There you go. So it does happen
better.
Both ways. There you go. You feel better now?
I feel better.
I'm so pleased about that. On occasion on this show, you have been, shall we say, somewhat critical of the Vancouver Whitecaps' modus operandi and their seeming reluctance to employ Canadian players. Fair?
Fair.
Okay. Simon, who keeps us in touch with things going on at the Whitecaps, dropped me a line yesterday and said, by the way, boys, just want you to know that the Whitecaps have signed four Canadians, three locals from the BC Premier League and another from the Maritime, to the Vancouver Whitecaps Academy, which remains 100% Canadian. So they're on their way.
Good.
So watch out for these young players coming through. Chow, Ellis, Kang, and Liam Elborn, who comes, I believe, from the Maritimes.
Good news.
There we are. It is good
yes.
news. And, part of the rest of the show, we hope, is going to be about young players and their development. And any moment now, with a bit of luck, we'll get hold of Thomas Rongan, who's the Academy Director at Toronto FC.
Are you sure that he got to Toronto? Is he having problems?
No, he's here. He's here. All been sorted out. Or so we thought. But there we are. Sometimes it doesn't happen like you expected it to do. So while we wait.
We can talk about Barcelona.
Well, we could.
Another great performance yesterday, by the way.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad. You know what? It is
74% of possession playing in Real Madrid's home stadium, embarrassing the home team, frustrating them, causing them to, you know, to kick and stomp on hands. I mean, Messi was stomped on by Pepe. It was ridiculous. And Barcelona was, you know, again, the incredible, you know, unit that they are and the type of football that they play. And Real Madrid looked like a third division team against Barcelona. It was embarrassing.
Really?
Yeah, for Real Madrid, it was embarrassing.
It was. And there aren't that many teams. There aren't that many teams. In fact, there are no teams that go to the Bernabeu and make Real Madrid look like a bunch of cart horses. Except one. And that's Barcelona. And yet, Real Madrid might win the league this year.
Well, they might.
Okay. But you want to talk to your old...
They can't beat Barcelona.
You want to talk to your old buddy now?
I'd like to.
We found him.
Oh, is he?
He's here. It's a little noisy, but... You want to introduce our next guest?
I don't know. Our next guest is an old friend of mine. We played together in Washington in 1980, and he came along with Johan Cruyff to the Washington Diplomats and made quite an impact on our team. And maybe Thomas remembers that goal that never was in the playoffs. Thomas, how are you? Bobby here.
Hi, Bobby. How you doing? I'm doing great. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. And wow, what a great honor it is to have you in charge of the TFC Academy with all the experience you have in coaching. You've coached MLS, you've coached youth clubs and national teams, and I'm really curious, what was it about this opportunity that that intrigued you, Thomas?
Well, to be real honest with you, Bob, it is one of the best and will be the best organization going forward in MLS, and after I talked to... In particular, Arne Winter, and listen to his vision and his philosophy. You know, I wanted to be associated with a club that I can identify myself with in terms of playing style, in terms of the way this organization wants to grow, and more importantly, the way they want to invest in youth development. That's very important to me and very important to the organization. And Arne is trying to put every piece in place now, you know, for this organization to continue to grow and get better and better.
You know, Thomas, I mean, you've been, ever since you left playing, you've become a coaching guru, and your last assignment was head coach of American Samoa, and you're the only one who ever produced a victory out of that country, and I'd like to congratulate you for that, by the way. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
It was awesome. It really was. It actually made me realize, Bob, that my passion again was youth coaching, because in American Samoa I worked with a bunch of amateurs that really played the game because they loved the game for the pureness of it, and that's the same with young talented players. And you know, at my juncture in my career, I when Arne Winter offered me this opportunity, I thought this makes a lot of sense after I had a personal great experience in American Samoa. And yes, we did win a game after 30 years. We scored a goal finally in the official World Cup qualifying, and as the head coach and as somebody still very competitive, that was incredibly rewarding. From a professional standpoint, but I think from a personal standpoint also, it made me realize why I love the game and why I started playing the game, and I want to give something back to the elite young player in Canada and in Toronto.
Well, Thomas, you know, a lot of people don't realize that you came to North America and you went to Los Angeles and you played for you know, one of the great coaches of all time, Rinus Michels. Has he been influential with you as you've taken on your various coaching assignments? And who has been, along with Michels, influential in terms of your style?
That's funny you ask that, because actually I'm at dinner with Arne Winter and Bob de Klerk, and I just told him the story about Rinus Michels and Johan Cruyff that both you and I played with. And if I look at my coaching background, my philosophy, it started with Rinus Michels. It started with Johan Cruyff. It started with a former teammate of ours, Bob Wijnaldum.
Yes.
We talked about the game. I was a young player. I learned a lot from them, and I think my fundamentals, I'm my own coach and my own person, but I draw a lot from my experiences from those. You know, Rinus Michels, one of the best coaches ever in the world, and Cruyff, one of the best players, and maybe the best player ever. And they shared a lot of their knowledge with me as a young player that I now use in my coaching career.
You know, Thomas, I mean, a lot of people don't believe it, but maybe you can be, because I know you were there with me, and when we used to speak, at least when I spoke with Johan Cruyff, he used to talk about, you know, playing the ball, don't lose the ball, don't give the ball away, long passes are usually lost, and here we are today arguably looking at what may be the greatest, you know, 11 that has ever played the game, and it has Johan's, you know, fingerprints all over it. I mean, is it a coincidence that this has happened and that he has been the architect?
No, it's not, you know, and quite frankly, you look at Barcelona, Bob, you know that. I mean, when Rinus Michels went to Barcelona, he brought the Ajax youth development system with him. Johan Cruyff built La Masia at Barcelona.
Yes.
That produced these great players, all based on, you know, Clockwork Orange, total football, 4-3-3 that Barcelona executes better than anybody else. And Arne Winter, who also was coached by Rinus Michels and won the only European championship in 88 with the Dutch national team, also is steeped in a very rich Ajax tradition. So the continuation of playing out of this 4-3-3 and trying to play technical, attacking, dominant football will happen again this year, and hopefully with a year of experience for Aaron and this team, and with a few additions, this team can finally talk about playoffs, which should be a realistic goal for this club and is Aaron's aspiration as head coach and technical director, but still in a style and with a brand of football that I think fans will really enjoy.
And Thomas, it'll be your job to find the players of tomorrow to stock the roster. Talking about total football, which is what you grew up with, do you think that players coming into an academy in their mid-teens, is it too late to teach them the fundamentals? Do they need to be taught this at the age of 4 or 5 years of age? Or can you transform them in their mid-teens?
Well, that's a great question. And quite frankly, I call that zone one, and that's 4 through 10, 11, 12, those are very critical years in skill and technique development. We clearly, over time, want to go down to the younger age groups and try to make an impact there and put our better coaches at those levels as well. You look at Ajax, Dennis Bergkamp is the under 10 coach, for instance, because coaches develop players, not the other way around. And we feel, with the resources that we have at Maple Leaf, believing that youth development and building our new facility, which is state-of-the-art, the best in Canada, maybe the best in North America, that we can really be the best youth development club in North America. And that's what we aspire to be, which means eventually reaching out to the younger players in Ontario and teaching them the proper fundamentals, so they have a chance when they become, as you said, 15, 16, 17, to eventually play for our first team and eventually maybe sell one of
to
Europe, because that's the business.
That's the way the rest of the world works. Thomas, thanks so much for joining us briefly on the show tonight. We know you're going to come into the studio and join us in months to come, but welcome to Toronto FC Academy, and thanks
for taking the time to
join us on the show. Interesting thoughts. We'll get much more when he comes in. He's promised to come in and do a whole hour with us in the not too distant future. But, you know, clearly some interesting thoughts right off the bat.
Well, I think what's the most important thing is building an academy, having competent people who have experience in the game, and developing a culture for a young boy who's 9, 10, 11, having him fully immersed in a soccer world, day in, day out, can do nothing but influence this young man and to become a better player. There's no question about it.
Just time before we go, and we've got about 30 seconds to argue about it. Your old pal Ancelotti, now in charge of PSG,
yes,
decides that he wants Tevez, even if the Milan clubs don't. I think I'd take him too. Trouble though he is, great goal scorer, real influence, game changer. I think I'm with Carlo on this. If I could afford him, I think I'd take Tevez too.
Well, and you know, Carlo Ancelotti is a man manager. He's a good man manager, and he'll be able to handle Tevez. And Tevez will love to play for him. So I agree. Good move.
We want to say thanks to Diana Matheson. We want to say thanks to Tommy Rongan. We want to say thanks to the professionals, the other side of the glass, who this week were Derek, Igor, and Jennifer. He's Bobby Arushi. We'll continue this argument in the pub, as we always do. I'm Nigel Reed. So you don't have to be. Until next time, thanks for listening.